The high cost of jealousy, the high cost of envy. Psalm 37:1, fret not yourself because of evildoers. Be not envious toward wrongdoers. For I was envious of the arrogant as I saw the prosperity of the wicked. A tranquil heart is life to the body, but envy is rottenness to the bones. In reflecting on the psychological, spiritual, mental attitude and or emotion called envy or jealousy, we see in a very clear way how our emotions as human beings are all connected to one another. For when I become envious, I also become anxious. And when I become anxious, I also become angry. And when I become angry, I then react in a violent, hostile way toward people. And when I react in that way, I condemn myself for having done it, and then I get depressed. And so I hate myself as a result, and then I begin to give up. So you see how one bad action or reaction in life, such as envy, leads inevitably toward other bad sins and reactions. The high cost of jealousy and envy. In the Bible, these two terms are generally synonymous. In our common usage, they are generally synonymous too. I looked them up in the English dictionary, and this is the way each was defined. Envy was this: chagrin or discontent at the excellence or good fortune of another, a resentful begrudging. Well, that was pretty good. He got the promotion and I didn't. Envy. She looks better than I do. She lost 15 pounds. I only lost 5. Ooh, envy. Jealousy was defined this way: intolerance of rivalry. Obviously, jealousy or envy can only exist where you have a mutual interest with someone. I mean, I can only really be envious if I am a CPA of other CPAs. Or if I am a teacher of other teachers, or if I am a musician of other musicians. Now, it can exist across the lines, as it were, but normally it will be just in that sphere where I have potential of influence. So, intolerance of rivalry. A teacher may not be very jealous of a bank clerk. So the bank clerk got a raise. So she was lifted up to a higher position in her work. So she is recognized by her peers. So what? It doesn't bother me as a teacher. But let that same bank clerk become a teacher in my school. Let the response of the students and the other teachers be such that they all like her and they respond to her and they admire her. Then she becomes a rival in my area. Well, the sum of both of these, envy or jealousy, is this: we want what others have, or we feel that they are in some way better than we are. Let me say it again. Whether we're talking about the biblical definition of envy or jealousy, or whether we're talking about the common usage, they both seem to approximate one another. The summary of the attitude is this: we want what somebody else has, or we think that someone else is better than we are, or at least better off than we are. Let me give you some biblical examples of envy and its effect. One is Joseph's brothers, where they sold their brother into captivity so that it leads to murder. Envy does. There was Cain, who killed his brother Abel because he was jealous of his brother. There was Saul, King Saul's envy and jealousy of little David. You remember that first passage when it came up? David had been out fighting the Philistines, and he came back, and all the people were lining the streets as the parade came through. And David and his soldiers were marching through, and Saul was standing in the crowd. You see, he had hoped that David would be killed. But instead, David comes back and he's standing and he's listening to what the people are saying. And they are singing a song and they're saying, Saul has killed his thousands, but David has killed his 10,000s. And Saul turned green with envy. And from then on, he sought to kill David. Now, the seriousness of envy or jealousy is this. In Matthew 27:18, we learn that the ostensible reason why the Jews murdered Jesus Christ was for no other reason than they were jealous that he had all the crowds of people following him and responding to him, and they were envious of this man. So that envy also leads to a phenomenon called greed. I mean, when you're envious of somebody or envious of some things, you want what they have, and that leads to an attitude of suspicion toward your friends. Did I tell you about the little boy in North Alabama who had a little platform right outside his window, and he used to put bird seed or whatever he wanted to put out there to feed the birds? And one day he ran out of bird seed, and so he put peanut butter out on the little bird feeder. And sure enough, one of his friends who used to sit up on the side of the roof and watch for the bird seeds flew down and chirping, happy, and, you know, flapping its wings, started eating the peanut butter. But a strange thing happened. He couldn't eat all the peanut butter at one time. So consequently, he went back up to the corner of his house and he just kept an eye on his peanut butter. And he no longer jumped around and flittered and sang and whistled, but he just watched. And whenever any other bird came near his peanut butter, he would dive bomb that bird and scare him away so that nobody could get his peanut butter. I mean that envy or jealousy will lead you to a spirit of greed, self-centeredness. What about some biblical examples of the opposite of envy and its effect? Well, in order to know what the opposite is, we ought to look to the Bible. The Bible tells us in 1 Corinthians chapter 13, verse 4. It's amazing to me How the opposite of so many sinful attitudes that we have are found in one chapter of the Bible in 1 Corinthians 13. It says this, that love is the opposite of jealousy. Love is not jealous. Well, that tells us what the opposite is. What are some examples of its effect? Are those in the Bible who have exhibited this attitude of love and openness toward people? I think of Abraham and Lot. You remember Abraham, the uncle, and Lot, the nephew? Normally, one would think that the superior would choose what he wanted first. But what did Abraham do? He told his nephew Lot, "You choose whatever piece of land you want." He wasn't jealously guarding what he had. "Here, you take whatever, and I'll take what's left." But then there was also David. There was King Saul always trying to kill him. David had an opportunity to do away with the king, and he never put forth his hand to do it. Jealousy, envy, and its effect. I think graphically in our own day, one of the best illustrations of jealousy happened down in Birmingham. Did you hear about it or read about it? When the irate ex-wife cut off the hair and then tarred and feathered the fiancé of her former husband. I take it you did hear about that. She was just jealous and envious of that woman. Well, what is the basic source of envy? Now that we've looked at the high cost, those are some ways that it would lead. It leads to greed. Why, it even leads to murder. If not literally, physically, oh, you can say to yourself in your heart, "Oh, I wish that person were dead. If only they didn't exist where they did, then the way would be cleared for me." Jealousy, envy. There are two basic sources. One is this: wanting what others have. Now, wanting what others have pertains to tangible things. I mean, we want either their material goods or their good reputation or their health or their good looks or their brains. We want what they've got. But the second source is thinking that others are better than we are, or else they are better off than we are. The first is obviously a tangible. The second is an intangible. I mean, if we think someone is better, we are really giving an interpretation to our relationship to somebody else. It may not be true, but of course the first thing you want to ask is it true? Are they really better? That's like the college roommate who said to his roommate, "I've finally discovered the secret to your inferiority complex." And the roommate excitingly said, "Oh, that's great. What is it?" And his roommate said, "It's that you're inferior." I mean, if in fact somebody is really better than you are or better off than you are, then your problem is probably not envy or jealousy, but your problem is sheer pride and failure to realize who you are and what you are. But what we're saying is that so you look at another situation or another person and you think to yourself, "This person is better off than I," or "This person is better in some way than I am," when in fact All you're doing is you are interpreting in your own mind. You are perceiving that they are better when they really may not be. But you become envious and jealous. For example, if a young teenage girl looked at another friend of hers who had green toenails because she's been soaking her feet in lemon juice, and this person looked at her and said, "Oh, I just wish I had green toenails because that person really must be better than I." Now, that's a silly example. I realize that. But you understand what I'm saying. The one teenager looks at the other and says, because this person has this quality or has this thing, then they must be better than I. And if I had it, then maybe I would be as good as they are. But envy is wanting, as wanting what others have, is the basis, I think, of much, if not all, other sin. Now, that's a radical statement. In the Bible, there is another name for wanting what others have. Do you know what it is? All right, it's covetousness. And in Exodus 20:17, the very last commandment says, "Thou shalt not covet." Now, having done a study of the Ten Commandments one time, I made a startling discovery as I went through those commandments and I came to the tenth, and it is this: that the basis behind breaking all the other nine commandments is the tenth commandment. That if you can free yourself from covetousness, friend, you are free indeed. You see, the first sin that was ever committed was based on covetousness. What did Eve want? Why? I may be as intelligent, as smart as God. I would be like God. Think about that. How can we avoid envy or jealousy? Let me give you four steps. The first step is this: don't compare yourself with someone else. In Galatians 6:4, we read these words: "But let each one examine his own work, and then he will have reason for boasting in regard to himself alone, and not in regard to another." The New International Version says something like this: "Each man should test his own actions. Then he can take pride in himself without comparing himself with someone else." I mean, sure, as you look around and you compare yourself, you'll always find somebody who is about three steps ahead of you. But Christian, why don't you look and see where God has brought you? And then you can't help but fall on your knees and say, "Oh God, I'm such an undeserving sinner. You brought me so far, and I thank you for what you've done in my life." So that you're not comparing yourself with someone else, which is a worldly standard of success, of achievement, but you compare yourself with yourself, and you thank God for what he's done. Isn't it a sad thing when you hear parents say, to one child, a brother or a sister. Oh, I wish you could be more like your little brother. Oh, I wish you could be more like your big sister. What a standard of comparison. That's not God's standard. We each are individual, separate people. God has made us unique. Look at 1 Corinthians 4, verse 7. For who regards you as superior? And what do you have that you did not receive? But if you didn't receive it, why do you boast as if you had not received it? You know the book that I quoted this morning, The Greatest Salesman in the World, also has a little chapter in there entitled, I Am Nature's Greatest Miracle. Now, I know that you can go too far with that kind of stuff and get off on just a positive ego profile, all that kind of stuff. But you understand, if you read it, what is meant by it. That what he is talking about is really what the Bible gets at, and that is you are the most unique you that has ever been placed upon the earth. There is a child's book that I like to read to the girls on their birthdays until they started getting a little too big. Maybe some of you have heard of it. Happy Birthday to You by Dr. Seuss. Have you ever read that book? Anybody? Can I see your hands? Okay, some of you. Probably be the only time I'll ask you to raise your hands in response. That wasn't an invitation. But what I wanted to point out is this. It has such tremendous content in telling a person, particularly a little child, that there's nothing greater in the world than what you are. You are the most unique thing that God has ever placed on the earth. Will you indulge me as I read just this big print? And it's only a short, short stanza. This is toward the end. Quote, today you are you, that is truer than true. There is no one alive who is youer than you. Shout aloud, I am lucky to be what I am. Thank goodness I'm not just a clam or a ham or a dusty old jar of sour gooseberry jam. I am what I am. That's a great thing to be. If I say so myself, happy birthday to me. Isn't that good? You understand how approximate that comes to Scripture, though? That God has created in each one of us unique people and will never be duplicated in all the earth. So, don't look around and compare yourself with somebody else. Why be what God intended you to be? Let's hurry. The second thing is be content. Not only don't compare yourself, but also be content. Be content with what you have. That is, don't covet. Matthew 6:25, Jesus says, don't be anxious about what you're going to wear, what the tomorrow will bring. Don't covet those things. Be content with what you have, but also with what you are. Accept yourself for what you are. Romans 12:3, where Paul says that each one of us has been given a certain measure of faith. So let everybody think of himself with sober judgment. That means don't think too highly of yourself. But I'm telling you, that is not the problem in the Christian world today. I think the problem is that we all think too lowly of ourselves. So the verse works two ways. Don't think too highly. Don't think too lowly. Think with sober judgment about yourself because God has given to each one of us a measure of faith. How do we begin to do that? By thanking God for everything that makes you unique and different. At the Kiwanis banquet, and I'm not plugging Kiwanis, at the Kiwanis banquet last year where the wives were invited, we had a lady who was a former Miss America who had the reputation of being the tallest female to ever participate in the Miss America contest. I mean, she was tall from North Carolina, Ben. Sort of like you. But she got up, and you know what she talked about? She talked about how tall she was. And it was one of the funniest talks we had ever heard. Everybody was in stitches the whole time. But she was capitalizing in thanking God for some freak, as it were, that had happened to her that made her taller than everybody else. And she used that as a means of acceptance for herself and in relating to people. So we Christians can thank God for those kinks, those ticks in us that makes us unique people. God intended it that way. All right. Thirdly, begin to concentrate on your gift. You see, envy will normally develop when you begin to look around at other people and you see what they're doing and you think to yourself, oh, I wish I could be like that. I wish I could do that. I wish I had that gift. I wish, I wish, I wish. But you see, your eyes are in the wrong place and your concentration is in the wrong place. So if you want to overcome, begin to concentrate on your gift. And that leads me to say that you and I need to know what our spiritual gift is. 1 Peter 4:10 says that every person, every living Christian has had or has at least one spiritual gift. You have a talent, you have an interest, you have a gift. So develop that gift. Concentrate on what God has given you and your life. We're not all preachers, or else two or three of us would be sitting out in the pew and then everybody be up here preaching. We're not all teachers. We're not all evangelists. We're not all Bible teachers. We're not all elders. We're not all deacons. But each of us has a specialty that God, in His grace and His wisdom, has given to everybody in the First Presbyterian Church. And that leads me to say, develop a specialty. Maybe you don't know what your particular spiritual gift is. Do you have an interest in doing something spiritually? Is there something that if you were given a choice, this is what you would like to do? Let me encourage you to develop that as a specialty in your life. I think Christians become discouraged and become envious of one another because one does not develop his particular gift. And he never becomes good at one thing. I mean, we run around and try to do everything, but we never become really good at just doing one thing. So find a specialty in the Christian church. Find something that you can do and then do it well. If you will do it well, you will be in a class all by yourself. You're not competing with somebody else, you see, to be better than they are. You're simply asking God every morning and every evening, God, was the gift that you have given to me well used today? And then finally, be conscious of others. In Romans chapter 12, verse 10, we read, be devoted to one another in brotherly love, give preference to one another in honor. Preference to one another in honor. I want to emphasize again that everybody has a gift and that everybody is himself a gift to the First Presbyterian Church congregation. I don't mean this facility. This facility is not the First Presbyterian Church. You, the congregation, the people, we are the First Presbyterian Church. We are this body. And some of us are hands, and some of us are feet. I'm not just a foot standing up here. I've got 2 feet and 2 ears and 1 mouth and a nose and all the parts, you see. So God, in his wisdom, uses the metaphor of the body, and he says, each one of you has a particular function, and in my body, I see a foot, I see a hand, I see an elbow, I see a thumb, I see a kidney, I see all these functions in the Church of Christ. So be conscious that God calls each one of us to function in his particular way. And now finally, if envy is already a problem for you, I would suggest that you do this. Every time that person or that thing comes to mind, that you thank God for that person and his or her ability and her gift. And the second thing that you do is that you in some way recognize the gift and the ability of that person by a personal word of encouragement, thanking that person for their gift and their talent. And thirdly, that you recognize that person to someone else. Now, if that doesn't begin to clear up your problem of envy and jealousy, then I recommend that you talk to another Christian and get some advice and counsel, or come talk to me so that we can begin to work on it together. May God give to us the freedom to live together free of the sin of jealousy in this congregation.